What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to Off the Chain, simply the best podcast in crypto. Let's kick this thing off.
Jared Nguyen is of the Binance Charity. This is the second part in a conversation series with Binance Charity members who are here to talk about what the charity does, how blockchain can help solve a lot of problems in the philanthropic industry, and how you as a listener can get involved and start making a real impact. But before I get into this episode with Jared, I want to talk about the three sponsors that made this episode possible. The first, BlockFi. You know that I love them. If Bitcoin is going to have any chance of becoming the next global reserve currency, we got to get more infrastructure and wealth management services built. That's exactly what BlockFi is doing. As you know, I'm a big fan of the company. I'm a user and an investor. Today, they offer three products. First is a US dollar loans against your crypto as collateral. The second is an interest-bearing account for your crypto deposits. And the third is allowing you to buy or trade cryptocurrencies. These three products are important in helping people do more with their Bitcoin, Ethereum, GUSD, etc. Don't want to sell your crypto but need US dollar liquidity? BlockFi will give you a loan. Or maybe you're a long-term holder like me and you want to earn some interest on your assets. Obviously, rates vary, but right now, BlockFi is paying 6.2% APY on Bitcoin and 8.6% APY on GUSD deposits. Unheard of interest rates in the legacy fiat world. As if these products weren't enough, BlockFi also recently told users that they'll be launching a credit card in 2020 that pays their rewards in Bitcoin rather than cash back or loyalty points. Think about it. A Bitcoin rewards credit card not only sounds dope, but they should have more people earning Bitcoin for their everyday purchases too. So BlockFi's been a longtime supporter of Off the Chain, and I'm a huge fan. Head on over to BlockFi.com/pomp. Again, that's BlockFi.com/pomp. One more time so you remember it, BlockFi.com/pomp, and check them out. There may even be some discounts and surprises when you head on over to BlockFi.com/pomp. Our next advertiser is Unstoppable Domains. Awesome name. Unstoppable Domains. They do exactly what you think they do. You can't stop the domains. So many of you probably heard about YouTube taking down crypto-related content or MetaMask getting removed from the Google Play Store. Well, the decentralized web is going to make that kind of censorship impossible. There are a lot of companies working on it, but one of the companies I'm really excited about is Unstoppable Domains. Brad and the team have created a way for anyone, even those without technical knowledge, to launch their own decentralized website. You can literally go to unstoppabledomains.com and use their .crypto domains to build a decentralized website. That website is then controlled by you and you alone. It is done the same way you control your Bitcoin, with a private key. So I've got a website set up on decentralized storage, and now I'm the only one who can take it down. It allows me to host this podcast, a blog, or whatever else I want on the domain without worry of censorship. And if that wasn't cool enough, I can even get paid Bitcoin directly to that domain as well. The reason I like what Unstoppable Domains is doing is because this is how the internet was supposed to work. Publish whatever you want online without anyone stopping you. The decentralized web is the future of the internet, so you should definitely start paying attention to what's being built there. Head on over to Unstoppable Domains and get your .crypto domain today. Again, Unstoppable Domains, unstoppabledomains.com, unstoppabledomains.com. You'll eventually start saying it in your sleep. And make sure you tell them that Pomp sent you. Now lastly, the third sponsor, really close to my heart, because it's us, Off the Chain. Joe and I have been working hard to grow the podcast, YouTube, Twitter, the newsletter, anything that we can do. So if you head over to offthechain.substack.com, you'll get the daily newsletter. Every morning, I wake up, I look at all the news, and I analyze, and I provide my opinion on what's going on in crypto. So offthechain.substack.com. Go subscribe, and then also head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the Anthony Pompliano YouTube channel. Our goal is to get to 100,000 subscribers this year, and the only way we can do that is with your help. So head on over to YouTube, search Anthony Pompliano, and then smash the subscribe button. All right, now let's get into this episode with Jared.
Anthony Pompliano is a partner at Morgan Creek Digital. All opinions expressed by Pomp or his guests on this podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Morgan Creek Digital or Morgan Creek Capital Management. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys, bang, bang. I'm here with Jared. We got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. This is part two, if you will, of a interview series with Binance Charity. There's a whole bunch of stuff that they're working on that I think is really important to kind of highlight and showcase. So thanks so much for coming to do this.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Really happy to be here.
All right, let's start with your background and kind of how you you got into crypto, and then we'll get into what you guys are doing with Binance.
Yeah, absolutely. So my whole life, I always wanted to be a teacher. That was my passion. I enjoyed teaching people. I enjoyed the thrill of helping people make those connections and understand something that they previously couldn't. And, you know, I went through school with that ambition, started going into college as a mathematics major, found that it wasn't exactly the direction I wanted to go in for a couple reasons. One being it wasn't exactly lucrative. And that said, I ended up making a major pivot in my life. I switched over to a business major, and at the same time, I started in my sales career in tech. And I went through, got my business marketing degree, and I really found that like I made a connection between being able to teach people about technology, something that might not have been easily comprehended prior, because I'm a tech nerd at heart. I'm geeky. I'm a gamer. I love all aspects of technology. So to be able to help people to understand it is something truly fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. So as I kind of climbed through the ladder, I worked at multiple tech startups throughout the Silicon Valley in different marketing and sales capacities, mm-hmm. and sales training. Really is what kind of was most appealing to me. Beyond all of that, I started to learn cryptocurrency in about 2015. And I saw, you know, that cryptocurrency provided something that we didn't have. And where we work with humans, we're one of the few things in this world that are unpredictable. Most other things are not random by nature. Human behavior is. And what I loved about blockchain was it eliminated that random human nature. I mean, there's always that teetering point of trust as to when somebody's going to behave in one direction or the other. And what I loved about blockchain was it eliminated that. And no longer did you have a brand of trust, but you had a system of trust. Mm-hmm. And I just seeing what blockchain can do and seeing what type of news is out there and what type of news could be out there with some of the positive impacts that we don't hear about, mm-hmm. is what really fueled my fire to get more engaged in this space.
Got it. What when you first saw crypto and Bitcoin, what kind of caught your attention? Like, what was that thing that pulled you down the rabbit hole?
So if anyone really says the first time they heard about Bitcoin is not related to the money aspect of it, I mean, there's always that component. I mean, people operate on incentive, and my incentive, as many others were, was, wow, what is this asset that otherwise is making people rich? It caused that intrigue. And that was my initial kind of interest to it. Once I dove a little bit deeper, though, I found like it wasn't necessarily just the opportunity to make money. It was the underlying technology. Mm-hmm. And I found it difficult for myself to learn and interpret the technology by my own. So that's why, you know, if I run into those situations where I can't understand something, I dedicate an hour a day to try to learn more about it. And little by little, until I get that click. And once I have that, I'm usually just full on board.
Yeah. I think it's Parker Lewis from Unchained Capital who says, came for the money, but stayed for the money, right? Yes. Meaning that came for like the personal financial gain, and then quickly get thrown down the rabbit hole of like, what is money? Why is it important? You know, yada, yada, yada. And then all of a sudden you realize, hey, this is actually a really, really big deal. And so people stick around for the money.
Absolutely.
Outside of the financial gain. Very cool. So let's talk about kind of blockchain technology and charity. I know something that you're passionate about and something that you've been spending more and more time on. Maybe just help us understand, like, what are the problems in the traditional philanthropic area that you think that blockchain technologies can solve? And then we can get into some of the specific examples.
Definitely. So, you know, we've all heard the stories about corruption and charity. And whenever there's something good or something with great power, I feel that corruption always follows. And we have that demonstration in crypto. We've seen it with ICOs. We've seen all of these things that kind of raised out of it. And unfortunately, humans are creatures that kind of flock to negative media. It's our fear or our flight mechanism. When we see something that otherwise can challenge us or otherwise is going to be, you know, it could be painful, we want to learn about it. Mm-hmm. So otherwise we don't fall victim to it. Unfortunately, it's our Achilles heel. And with charity specifically, I'll give an example of the Red Cross in Haiti. There was about $500 million of donations. $125 million was dedicated to overhead expenses, which is a pretty significant amount. When you think about it, it really shouldn't take that much effort to give somebody money who needs it.
What goes into overhead expenses?
You know, there's going to be salaries. There's going to be, of course, the transfer agents. There's a number of things that goes into it. But to say that $125 million is required to get from point A to point B, I know a lot that could have been done with $125 million. But if you go even a little bit further down that rabbit hole, of the remaining $375 million, there was was only 6 houses that were reconstructed. And
what?
Yes. And that was actually posted online. I believe the Wall Street Journal had made a post about that. And
wow.
So there's a lot of unsolved or kind of unknown as to what happened in that catastrophe specifically. Like if there's $500 million, unless they're only building 6 mansions, there's obviously a lot that could have been done with that. Mm-hmm. And where blockchain really can kind of help with this is if you hand your money to Red Cross, we gave the example of you hand $100, how much ends up in the end beneficiary's hands? And it's roughly about $20. Mm-hmm. With blockchain, we at Binance, what we're really trying to do is not only empower people with those funds, we create the wallets on their behalf, we put the money directly into that wallet, so there's end-to-end transparency, but then we take it a step further and we educate on how to access those funds, how to convert it to fiat in their local currencies. Mm-hmm. And that's really the fascinating part is that the people in these communities, they haven't even had computers. They haven't had internet. Now they're getting cell phones and they're getting cryptocurrency wallets. So it's that leapfrog effect in which they are skipping an entire generation of technology.
Yeah. So for those that didn't listen to the first part with Helen from Binance Charity, essentially what you guys are doing is you're creating wallets. You're handing them to people, I'll say in need, right? Because it could be a whole bunch of different reasons as to why they're getting this. They are the recipients of the philanthropic contributions that someone somewhere else is contributing. And part of the value here is Binance Charity is covering 100% of the operational, Binance is covering 100% of the operational cost of Binance Charity. So every dollar or every BNB or every Bitcoin, whatever you contribute through Binance Charity, 100% of that is being received by one of those people in need. And so rather than that $100, only $20 makes it to the final recipient. Here, $100 makes it. And then obviously using blockchain and digital wallets, the contributor can actually track and know exactly where their money went, which is a really big thing, I think, from a confidence standpoint of just, I want to understand that I'm making an impact. Now that I can track it, I have to have a higher degree of confidence, and hopefully that will actually lead to more contributions from people.
Absolutely. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, blockchain is an excellent means of eliminating that trust factor. But there's always going to be some part of human interaction that's required in this process. And I think at that point, the Binance name really helps with that, knowing that, you know, you're working with one of the major companies in the blockchain space. And if you were ever to trust somebody with that last mile transition, I don't see a better name than Binance to be able to help with that.
Yeah. And another thing that I think it's pretty interesting here is I think it's Alex Gladstein, the chief strategy officer from the Human Rights Foundation, said to me, he goes, look, part of the reason why Bitcoin specifically is what he was talking about, but just I think crypto even in general can have such an impact on philanthropic aid is a lot of times when you go and you give the money to an organization like you're talking about, there's just overhead costs. But what he wanted to really highlight was there's a lot of corruption that occurs as well. So when you donate money somewhere, they usually put it into some sort of government bank account. There's usually, you know, what I'll put in air quotes, a tax by somebody somewhere, whether it's the leader of that country or that local region or the owner of the bank or whatever. Just money that kind of gets taken out. And then it goes through like a waterfall, right? And there's a bunch of money and taxes and all the stuff that occurs. And you end up getting a very low percentage, right? In some cases, 20%, a little bit higher, a little bit lower to the end recipient. And so his whole thing was transparency is important for the contributor. But also, I think what he was really excited about was the ability to circumvent potential points of failure or potential points of corruption. So now all of a sudden you're not giving the money to the government of a local country or a local region. You're giving it directly to the recipient. And so you're actually reducing the incentive for a nefarious actor to do something, right? They literally cannot do that because now a contributor can directly give to the recipient, which I think is a really powerful thing that if you're not aware of how some of this works, you don't know the problem, right? But once you understand the problem, then the solution becomes pretty obvious and is actually pretty exciting.
Absolutely. And yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The less hands that are in the bucket, so to speak, the less opportunity there is for a grab. Mm-hmm. And when there's that, that's when you have the opportunity to do something really pure. And it's very infrequent that you have an opportunity where, without going to Africa and handing somebody a $100 bill, that's the closest of an equivalent that you can get to this amount of transparency.
Yeah. What do you think? So you mentioned that some of these people that are on the receiving end of the philanthropic efforts, right? They've never had a computer before. They've never had internet access, all this stuff. And now they're getting mobile devices, internet connectivity, et cetera. I think there's a lot of people who would say, look, how are these people going to go from, I don't have internet access, I don't have connectivity, to now I'm going to be using cryptocurrencies and digital wallets, right? A lot of folks in the United States, for example, don't know how digital wallets work. They don't know how cryptocurrency works. How do you think about the education process and kind of how those individuals who are just now getting connectivity can kind of leapfrog some of the folks who have had internet connectivity in the developed world for a long time?
So it's, if you think about it this way, there's, like I mentioned, everybody has their motivations. Everybody's incentivized by certain things. And if I were to go door to door, knocking on people's doors, trying to educate them on Bitcoin, I'd be treated just as though I was some sort of religious evangelist and get a lot of doors closed in my face because they don't have the need for it. But when you go into a situation where there's a demand or there's just a need, and Helen spoke about this just recently, was the bottom billion. Those individuals specifically will, in my belief, be the main drivers of Bitcoin adoption, because at this point, there's nothing more of a drive than hunger or just those basic needs. I mean, Maslow outlined it very well, in which there's, you know, your hierarchy of needs. And if one of those aren't being met, that being, you know, your food, your security, or just your general health and hygiene, you're at a point where the demand is now much higher. And in the balance of supply and demand, if somebody needs it desperately, it would be amazing to think what the human body or what the human mind is capable of in those situations. And if you have no choice, if it's whether or not I'm going to have dinner for my family tonight, or if I'm going to have sanitary pads or not, I'm going to learn what is necessary. I have a great amount of incentive of survival. And for that reason, I think that's going to be the driver of Bitcoin and just crypto adoption in general, is just that general demand or that absolute need to survive.
Yeah, it's very similar to what happened with mobile banking in general across a number of nations in Africa, for example, but elsewhere, where it's almost like they have no preconceived notions. They have no kind of allegiances to certain technologies or mechanisms to interact with the financial system. Everything's cash.
Right.
And so now all of a sudden, what they're able to do is they're able to leapfrog, because the very first time that they ever deal with quote unquote mobile banking, it happens to just be better than the United States.
Right.
Right. There's no kind of legacy technology there, et cetera, which I think is exciting. The other question is, I get, okay, Binance or some other group will create a digital wallet, give it to somebody. Now a contributor can give currency to that end recipient. How does that end recipient use the cryptocurrency, right? It's a component of, I've got a digital wallet, maybe I can figure out how to send it to somebody else, but what about with merchants and kind of merchant adoption and all of that?
So with merchant adoption, I think that's one of the major bottlenecks to just mass adoption. And without, one of my previous jobs was to train inside sales personnel. And what these inside sales personnel would do is they would call at least 500 small, medium businesses per day in efforts of selling them a cost-saving voice over IP system. Mm-hmm. And in their minds and in my mind and anybody else who knows the full offering, that is a major savings of money. You could go from spending $150 a month to spending $20 a month. Mm-hmm. And there's an immediate demand for that. But the thing is as soon as you call somebody, you're immediately at a point of value transfer where they aren't going to want to hear it until you can get something out there fast enough for them to be interested in hearing more. Mm-hmm. And they'll be quick to hang up. So to be able to penetrate a market like small, medium business and to get the mass market get interested in that adoption is going to take a lot. And perhaps it might be something where they have no other choice to do it. Maybe we're put in an economic situation where that's a mandate. But just again, in order to really understand what will drive that and what will get that to happen, you really have to think, like, in Africa, is that going to be more of a demand? is that going to be another thing? Just as in Venezuela, you see paper money littering the streets. The leapfrog effect is either going to completely swallow the existing currency system of what they're doing, or we have another thing in place, and that's Binance Uganda, in which we'll actually assist them in converting from the cryptocurrency to their local fiat, and they'll be able to then do transactions as normal, which is that's the safeguard of it. Hopefully, and you know, who knows what will happen in 5 years. We're in a very young market, but I could see it as, just as mentioning, in those situations of desperate need where perhaps fiat is less than desirable, then we're going to have no choice but then to adopt these cryptocurrencies.
Yeah. What about in the United States, right? I know a lot of people who say, hey, look, I believe that there's, you know, billions of people around the world that need help, everything from the Australian brush fires to countries in Africa, et cetera. But I want to help here in the United States. I think part of kind of your focus with Binance is here domestically. Like, how are you guys thinking about various charities and philanthropic efforts here at home in the kind of the Western world?
Yeah, and that's a very good point that you bring up. And I read a shocking study that only 80 to 90% of Americans actually end up traveling outside of the United States. We're a very endocentric culture in which there's not really so much of a need to go out, but I personally would say that there is a need. And as such, given that we don't get a ton of outside cultural experiences, I mean, you may as well put one of the Hungry Children's commercials with a Sarah McLaughlin commercial behind it. And that's going to be, I mean, everybody at least knows that these things are happening outside of the United States. And there's a great propensity to help. And it's also a very cost-effective way to help outside of the United States. But I think you're absolutely right, in which there is a demand. There's a need to really drive some of these philanthropic efforts in the United States. Those being, I mean, there were fires in California. There's a major homelessness crisis, the opioid crisis. There are many ways that we can help closer to home. And that's actually one of the main reasons that I'm coming on with Binance, is to really drive those initiatives to get close to home. Because if you think about it, I slightly alluded earlier that people have flocked to this negative attention regarding Bitcoin, about cryptocurrency. And most people think Bitcoin is blockchain, and when in actuality, there's much more to it. So to get people to really not be afraid. And I mean, if you ask anybody about Bitcoin who hasn't really involved, they're like, oh, I know people who lost money in that, or I know people who lost their mortgages in that. The biggest striking emotions that, I mean, the thought of losing a home can strike anybody in the heart. And that's what people are going to remember. They're going to remember how something made them feel. In other words, what my thoughts are is that focusing on U.S. philanthropic efforts is what's going to drive some additional media towards Bitcoin in the way that it needs to, or towards blockchain in the way that it needs to be able to demonstrate that there's some pure benevolent capacities of blockchain. And I believe that if we can get some real impacts, and we're working with a number of foundations to try to pilot this opportunity. The Gleason Foundation is one. We're also working in communications with Make-A-Wish Foundation. The thing that we run into is that we have a mission to uphold. And that mission is that the money goes directly into the hands of the end beneficiaries. And so what we need is we need partners. We need partners that are willing to basically shake hands with us and allow us to take lead in communicating directly with the end beneficiaries, helping them in the conversion from, you know, crypto to fiat. We'll facilitate the entire process. In fact, we'll sponsor the entire process and handle all development costs. But we need somebody who can come into this as a mutual partner and drive that same initiative and ensure that the end beneficiaries receive 100% of the donation, not 90%, not 95 or even 99 for that matter, but 100% of it.
Yeah. And I guess part of that is the mechanism is the same as it would be in other countries, where you would give the digital wallet to the end user and then people could track the funds, et cetera.
Correct.
Got it. And then what would be the role of, whether it's Make-A-Wish or Gleason Foundation or any other nonprofit? Like, how would they help facilitate, or what would their role be in that partnership?
Their role in that partnership would be connecting us with the end beneficiaries. We ultimately, if you go to binance.charity, you'll see a list of charities and a list of projects. Most of those projects are currently in Uganda. What we would end up doing doing then is creating a wallet, one dedicated wallet in which people can send their donations to. And with that, we would have a smart contract or a code in place that would then divide and distribute to the end beneficiaries of that project directly. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking with somebody last night who, sadly, their wife has had ALS and is bedridden. They were in a situation where, and if you've heard about the Gleason Foundation or heard about Gleason's story, which you can stream it on Prime, it's an absolutely beautiful yet devastating story. They waited a very long time before they could even get a device that allowed their wife to communicate, in which they, if once ALS really takes effect, you lose all bodily control, including the ability to speak. Mm-hmm. There are devices that you can use that you literally use your eyes to be able to speak and communicate again. Mm-hmm. And the worst part about that disease is that you're fully cognizant. You're fully aware of everything around, but you're trapped in your body and unable to speak. Mm-hmm. So those initiatives in itself, if we were to create something with the Gleason Foundation, we would work to say, okay, hand us, you know, the people that have been on the bottom of this list, the people that have been waiting the longest, if there's 100 of them, if the device is $15,000, we'll slowly stack each of those accounts until they're at that threshold that they're able to actually purchase one of those devices. Mm-hmm. And that's where we really want to make these success stories. And, you know, there's different tax liabilities and things of that, but we try to make this an end-to-end solution. We have consultants that are helping us with that process. It's really a white glove. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we just set this up and we end it. We want to create these success stories and we want to drive the success of these foundations as a partner, a mutual partner.
For sure. How much of this is technology based in terms of the technology is a kind of an advantageous component versus it's more of just somebody saying, hey, this is important and we're going to put, warm bodies against it that are smart, that are passionate about this, and we can solve it that way.
So the initial part of it is really the relationship. And that's where I'm coming in, is to try to drive the relationships in the United States with charities and understanding and comprehending blockchain. Once you overcome that threshold, and I'm sure you can relate speaking to people, it's like as soon as you mention the word crypto, I mean, I wish I knew the person that invented the word crypto, because I'd slap them in the face and said, what a terrible name for such a magnificent technology. I mean, it's in it in itself, root is cryptic, and crypto, you think death, you think something horrible. If you mention the word crypto in any type of business interaction, your credibility goes from 100 to 50, and immediately you're up against a wall of barriers of how you're overcoming. Why are you using crypto to do something like this? Because immediately, again, people affiliate crypto to negativity, whether that be child pornography, whether that be the dark web, or anything else. I'd say the biggest barrier with a human interaction, the warm body aspect of it is the proof showing people that blockchain is a true solution to this. And once you overcome that, the technology takes over. And that's the best thing about blockchain, in my opinion, is that it's all code and it's trustless, in which once the code is implemented, it's just a computer following a set amount of instructions. Mm-hmm. So the main part of it, the onboarding, once that's done, which is, you know, a bit of a lengthy process, but still is necessary. The rest of it is kind of automated and autonomous, in which Binance's marketing, Binance Charity Foundation's marketing, and the marketing of the partner is what will continue to drive that, as well as the influencers that we partner with to drive focus towards these initiatives.
Yeah. What have been the channels that you think have been most effective in terms of getting the word out on the contribution side, right? Getting people aware of the projects that Binance is working on and kind of why they should be contributing to them.
So it's funny because, you know, you and myself both are very active in the crypto space. And how long ago was it that you learned about Binance Charity?
I think when they first announced it, I think it was around the maybe year and a half ago.
Okay.
When they announced either it was the listing fees were all going to get donated, or it was the creation of
the listing fees. Okay. Right. And that was the big announcement. Binance stated that all of their listing fees, whatever that range was, would go directly to charity. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, had you heard much as to their efforts or the amount of money that they raised?
I cheat because I spent a lot of time with the executive team in Singapore about maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, whatever it was, and they kind of gave me a full rundown. So that doesn't really count.
Okay, well, you're unfortunately passing my shit test with flying colors. And the point I'm trying to make is really not many people have heard about it, and it disappointed me, being an active participant in the blockchain space, to not have heard about some of the success. I mean, $5 million raised in, you know, the 6 months that they had done so is absolutely magnificent. Mm-hmm. So when I had heard that, I immediately immediately thought, wow, this is struggling. People should be hearing about this. And not just people in the crypto community, but what about an opportunity for people to hear about the crypto community in a positive light versus a negative light? Mm-hmm. So what I would say right now is the channel that has been effective is social media. It has worked. It's helped. But my approach in coming into this is to make more exposure, to work with the people that have influence in the space and gamify this. Make it fun. Get people. I mean, there's a lot of social media campaigns that can otherwise generate more revenue or more donations, should I say. And I think that there's a lot of room for growth and a lot of room for partnership. And what I will encourage anybody who is interested in the charity space, and I could tell a quick story.
For sure.
I came into the space about a year and a half ago. And Anthony, if you remember, I talked to you. I said, you know, I want to be in this space. How can I participate? What things are necessary? And I had a vision. I could do marketing. I can do PR. I can do all of this. And for about a year and a half, I made ends meet. My business was successful. I got clients. And there was something that was missing. And I felt, okay, I can continue to engage within this ecosystem. But what is it in my life that's really going to make a difference? And on the side of all of this, I run a nonprofit preschool chain where we teach mindfulness and meditation to children and their families. And that was very fulfilling to me. It was my first dabble into kind of a bit of philanthropy. And it wasn't until just about 3 months ago, I was on a panel with Jill Nee of the Binance Charity Foundation. And it was the first time that I had heard of all of the great things that they were doing. And I told her after the fact, I said, I am so impressed with what you're doing, but I'm so disappointed that I haven't heard about it sooner. What are your efforts and what have you done? And they said that they had difficulties getting exposure because journalists didn't want to necessarily write about it because it wasn't going to drive the price of Bitcoin. And that goes back to the ulterior motive of what is it that's really going to impact it. And it broke my heart. I said, look, I want to help. I will not charge you. I will do whatever I can. And within just weeks, we got podcasts, speaking opportunities. We're getting featured in major news releases. It was all of those things at that point that they said, okay, we want to work with you more. And at that point, it kind of converted to less of me just doing these pro bono efforts to really being a strategic partner. And it just took a little bit of effort, a couple of months. And now my life has completely pivoted in a way where my entire focus is going to be focused towards these philanthropic efforts. So I would implore anybody who has a similar feeling in their day in, day out of what is at the end of this road to think about what is it that would really be a memory of them. And it's, as you mentioned yesterday, I forget who you quoted about, you know, what will people remember you for when you die or anything of that. Yep. I mean, we never know how long we have.
Yeah.
And that's where my focus is now.
And so part of this, I think, when people hear Binance Charity, I think they immediately go to, there's BNB and all this stuff. But my understanding is that you guys are completely agnostic to which asset people contribute in and really are trying to drive the end impact, not so much worried about it being, you know, exclusively tied to Binance or BNB token, et cetera.
Correct. At this point, you can do BTC, you can do Ethereum, you can do BNB. It depends on the project as well. But it doesn't mean that other currencies can't be supported. If you're a Binance token, or if you're on the Binance exchange, the facilitation of it is relatively simple. I'll give an example. I've been working with Dan Zimmerman of the IOTA Foundation, and they also are working in the philanthropy space very heavily. So there was an immediate synergy. And that's what I love about this space, is that if you have similar minds, you can make some amazing things happen. And when it comes to philanthropy, it's such an immediate connection with somebody in which you know that you both have only the best intentions. And the purest of intent in mind. And he said, I want IOTA to be able to, you know, be one of these transactions. And IOTA is a feeless transaction. And there's no fees in IOTA, which is even more pure in itself. It was a matter of an introduction to their team. And they're working on seeing what can happen with that facilitation and what can happen with that integration. And it's that simple. So any crypto projects out there that want to be a bigger part of this, absolutely reach out and we can work on that.
For sure. What are you most excited about kind of over the next 5 years when it comes to Binance Charity or just the kind of philanthropic industry in general when it comes to crypto?
I'm most excited about just the massive potential of it. I mean, if you think of it in this analogy, the tip of the iceberg, right? You can only see so much that's happened, but truly what's happened thus far has been It's been strong, but there's so much potential. We haven't even started in the United States yet. We just now are starting. Mm-hmm. So in the next 5 years, what my vision is I want the crypto community to band together and be a voice that's heard. And imagine a tragedy, whether it be a mass shooting, some sort of disaster relief or anything of that. And one of the major donating parties being the crypto community, not Binance, but the crypto community generating X million dollars for a cause. That, in my opinion, is what's going to drive the adoption of cryptocurrency. And that's what's going to drive people to think, I want to learn a little bit more about that. Maybe they won't learn a little bit right then and there, mm-hmm. but maybe this would be enough for them to get their first wallet. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it'll get that just to be enough for them to watch a video about what this is. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's an education component that as soon as the interest or the awareness starts, there's an adoption process. Mm-hmm. And hopefully by these initiatives, we're going to be able to plant some of those seeds, which will over the next 5 years grow into beautiful trees.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any things that you're concerned about in terms of when it comes to the crypto community and charity?
I am. And, you know, I've said before, the community, it's a nerd's paradise, but it's also, you run into that effect where you get the mask behind the computer. And I've had, and I'm sure you can attest, I've had countless hackers from overseas attempting to steal my Bitcoin. And you lose that. It's not like you're stealing a wallet from somebody in line. You lose that face-to-face interaction where now that isn't a person, that's just Bitcoin. And you're just taking Bitcoin from a wallet that you have no idea who that's tied to. So you lose some of that. And I think that's a lot of the fear that people have about cryptocurrency. So as I mentioned earlier, where there's opportunity, there comes corruption. Mm-hmm. But I believe that the system that's been built in place right now is as pure as it can get. And I would only hope that over the coming years that only purity comes into this. Mm-hmm. But I know that there will be other things that follow. So I do have fear of there being corruption that could occur. But we take a valiant effort towards every person that we vet, every partner, every end beneficiary to ensure that it's only going to be put towards the benefits that we otherwise were disclosing in the process.
For sure. And then what can people do at home in order to participate or kind of learn more about what you guys are doing?
For one, follow us on Twitter, follow us on social media channels and keep, I would say, you know, the one thing, just look at Blockchain for Good projects. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take long to support them. It doesn't take long to circulate it. And it's just a matter of visibility. Perhaps a retweet on something will get that to be visible to somebody that might make a $100 donation. Helen gave a great example yesterday that they created the Pink Care token in Africa and Uganda specifically. Sanitary pads don't really exist. Mm-hmm. So imagine the impact that could have on a young woman's life. There's their social interaction, their behaviors, the way that molds them, the way that it makes them. For a $4 donation, that's a year's worth of sanitary pads. So even the smallest amount can make a real big difference. That said, get engaged, start sharing these things and start helping to promote that awareness and take part of it. I mean, action is one of the biggest things we can take. And that's one of the biggest ways we can make an impact is just by making a slight contribution or sharing and circulating.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can find me on Twitter.
Are you a big LinkedIn guy?
I am. And, you know, LinkedIn, it's more of a messaging platform than anything for me. But, you know, you can follow me on Twitter. You can connect with me on LinkedIn or you can reach out to me via email. My email is probably all over the internet at this point. But if you connect with me on LinkedIn, just add a note saying that you want to talk about charity foundations or anything of that. And I'll be more likely to accept and start a conversation.
Absolutely.
Just don't try to sell me anything. So.
Come on. You're training in sales teams. How do you hate on somebody else trying to sell?
You know, it's so funny because when I started inside sales and I started training people, and after I was hung up on a couple thousand times, I stopped hanging up on telemarketers. And even my wife stopped hanging up on telemarketers because she's like, oh, that could be my husband or that could be someone in that same situation. And, you know, you get kind of just some of that empathy from it. It's funny. But that said, I don't like LinkedIn sales messages.
Yeah, I don't answer the LinkedIn sales messages or the telemarketers. So I don't have that
exactly
that opportunity.
The great iPhone feature of silencing unknown callers is a blessing and a curse. You know, I've limited my distractions, but I also miss some important calls. So
for sure. Yeah. Let's do rapid fire before we finish up. What do you think is the most important company in crypto other than Binance?
Other than Binance, you know, if we're thinking from a United States perspective, just in general, I think that I might get backlash from this, especially from the passionate crypto users. But what I love about Coinbase specifically is that they're not only, I mean, they're a simple approach. They are the retail of crypto. But what I like what they've been doing is that they've been putting in an education process as well. So not only are people, I mean, before when I signed up for Coinbase, it's like enter in your credit card and it encourages you to do a credit card. It's faster transactions, everything else. And there's a lot of opportunity to lose some money in that situation. What I like that they're doing now is the education component. You're learning about the assets that you're investing into, and you're actually incentivized to learn about them. So I think that gamifying just the adoption of crypto and the companies that are doing exactly that are some of the missing piece of this, and helping people learn and understand, because people won't really trust what they don't understand. Mm-hmm. So
what's the one regulation or law that you would change or improve if you could?
I would, there's a lot of them. I went to Malta recently. And have you been to Malta or an international conference recently?
I've been to some international places, but I have not been to Malta.
So Malta, I went to their conference, and it was easily, and no exaggerations, 10 to 15 times larger. The exhibit floor had such a great amount of innovation. And I feel that the United States dampens and otherwise creates a barrier to entry of innovation. And we're going to get surpassed in that way, in which all of these innovative ideas, if they have to spend $50,000 in attorney fees to be able to even get that idea on the roadmap or to make it legal, there's so many ideas that just aren't happening. And you can see when you go to Malta and there's just all of these great projects. I was actually there with the securities attorney, Josh Lawler. So many of them had such a great use case, but their problem was that they're afraid of coming to the United States when it's such a huge market. So to help them to come over, there's obviously a cost associated, but that barrier to entry in itself, I think that the regulations, if there's a way to be a little bit more permissive or reconstruct the token laws that we have now, the Token Taxonomy Act is a perfect example of it. There are things that need to happen. Our laws are a bit archaic, and if they continue to prevent us from growth, the rest of the world is just going to jump right over us.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. Most important book you've ever read?
Sun Tzu's Art of War. And it's the most boring. Because I find that military warfare and business, if you change some words here and there, they're almost identical.
Of course.
And when you read that, think about it from a business stance. And Sun Tzu is spot on in every aspect. It's a dry read. But I, a lot of my personal like beliefs have been kind of built from that foundation. Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, it's an approach of truly understanding an environment before you jump into it. You know, and that's where a lot of people lose money in Bitcoin, mm-hmm. or crypto. They jump into it before they fully understand it. But Sun Tzu, know thyself, know thy enemy, 1,000 battles, 1,000 victories. You know, probably, I hope I don't sound too pretentious by saying his most well-known quote. Yep. But that in itself, if you know everything about the environment you're going into, you know your competitors, you know the threats, you know the risks, you're eliminating surprises in business is only advantageous. So
absolutely. Aliens, believer?
I think you... It's almost like the Schrodinger's alien, right? Like, if it, I don't know how to explain that another way, but to think that there's not something out there in such an expansive universe is naivety. Yeah. But there, until we find it, people are going to be naysayers. So yeah, I think that, you know, until we can say that we've explored every inch of the galaxy, which mm-hmm. is never going to happen, there's no reason not to believe.
Yeah. What do you think happens when we find aliens? You think that it's a mass hysteria and everyone's freaking out? Do you think people are like, wow, it's a really cool science breakthrough? What's the reaction?
You know, there was a movie that really fascinated me. I hope that you remember the name of it, because I don't off the top of my head. It was, I think it was Julianne Moore or someone of that. But the premise of it was that aliens had came to the world, and they had different stations in all of the different countries, one being China, one being the United States. And it showed how all the different cultures reacted and how people misinterpreted what their motive was. So immediately, you know, they put up a symbol and everybody tried to decipher the symbol. And they created a roundtable of people that started talking about it. And the symbol was deciphered to be either a weapon or a tool. And China thought that it was a weapon, and China immediately starts launching nukes at them to try to fight them off. Whereas everyone else is I'll wrap it up. The premise of the story was that the aliens ultimately wanted the world to have a coalition and create a roundtable of people that were effective at communicating.
Interesting.
And the aliens wanted to help the world. And they wanted to know that we were capable of empathy and support and love and compassion, and that we would be able to otherwise learn from them. And in their time of need, as they had starvation that was on the brink of, you know, their devastation, that they would be able to lean on us for help. So at the end of it, I think that, you know, don't fear what you don't understand. Instead, maybe some intrigue, but at the same time, don't be the person underneath the Independence Day, explosion, take an observation from a fair distance and try to learn. Don't fear what's unknown.
Yeah. I think it's a very different perspective than like the alien invaders that are coming to kill us all.
Yes. It's not like Mars Attacks or something of that, or Signs, you know.
Yeah, I just wonder if we got some compassion.
Yes, exactly. Hopefully they're loving aliens at the end of the day.
That would be very, very good. One question you have for me to finish up?
What do you think needs to happen in the charity space for people to believe and trust?
I'm a huge believer that people are much more empathetic and helpful when they have real world experience and understanding. Yeah. And so the most powerful thing you can do is you can take somebody and have them experience the pain somebody else has, right? And pain not being, hey, you've got to go be hungry, or hey, you've got to go be homeless, or you've got to, you know, go and be in a place where there's no clean water. But if you can just expose people to, look, there's this problem, right? And so whether that's through kind of things that are as simple as a movie or a book, a podcast, something like that, or as complex as actually physically taking somebody to go and see it for themselves, I think the more that people are exposed to that and realize kind of the challenges and complexities other people's face, it's just more likely that they are willing to participate in helping solve that problem or improve somebody's life, right?
I agree.
And I think that's one of the big challenges of charitable work, is just how do you get people to understand the issues and care about the issues, right? And so I think you solve that by exposure. Big question is always, how do you do it? But obviously the internet makes that a little bit easier. And then if you can get people to actually travel to wherever the area of impact is, I think that there's solutions there as well.
So are you ready for us to fly you to Uganda then?
I would definitely go to Uganda.
All right, we're going to talk more about that.
I have gone to Nigeria 2-3 years ago, and I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
So I'd be down for Uganda trip.
All right. We're going to talk more about
that. In two episodes, they've got me donating money and potentially going to Uganda. You guys work fast.
Yeah. We've got to close the deal while we've got you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming to do this, Jared.
Thank you so much.
Definitely
going
to have to do this again in the future as you guys keep going and making more progress. Because I think the work you guys are doing is super important. And for those that want to learn more, they can go to binance.charity and see all the great work that you and your colleagues are doing.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Pomp here. If you like this episode of Off the Chain and want to help us take crypto to the top of the Apple, Spotify, and other podcast charts, please do us a favor and rate, review, and subscribe. To review, simply go to the Off the Chain homepage, scroll down until you see the 5 blank stars. Taking 15 seconds to fill those stars in and leave a quick review goes a long way in helping us take the entire crypto ecosystem to the top of the charts. I appreciate you listening, and see you next time on Off the Chain.